Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so excited you can stand. Come inside, come inside. Wow, that was really bad.
You don't have much of a voice.
Come
it's like
inside,
angry voice.
The show's about to start. Guaranteed to Victor Fest Paul. No, I really don't have that much of a voice, but it was a good opening. I heard it actually on the television show tonight, that song. So I was like, huh, that reminds me of the 1986 Mets highlight film, which is the last time that the Mets really needed a highlight film. But anyway, welcome back to the Seth and Sean Sports Radio Show. The expertise that we claim to have may have not been so expert last week in our NFL preview from both sides. I mean, there were definitely some fantasy duds in the last week. We're going to get to that. We'll talk a little bit about the baseball playoffs, the Pirates finally reaching 500, and my World Series prediction looking pretty good right now. I don't know about yours. And we'll top that off with a little bit of soccer and tennis because the U.S. Open did conclude this week. So we'll give Seth a little break, talk about some tennis. Anyway, so you're David Wilson, my Mauricio is true. Yeah. Not really all that they were cracked up to be.
No. To give a little bit of credit, Maurice Jones-Drew, they were down 21. They were down 14-2 so quick, they kind of had to get out of the running game. David Wilson, there's really not much to say. Either he snaps out of it, or he's going to make a lot of fantasy owners very, very unhappy.
Well, the Giants are in a lot of trouble if he doesn't snap out of it. I mean, a ridiculous amount of trouble. Because you know your boy from Maryland, Delray Scott, is not a starting running back in this league.
Well, he's a Maryland boy, so he's have faith in Maryland people.
Well, that says enough. The fact that how many Maryland boys are starters in the NFL, probably count them on one hand. I only know
Number of Maryland starters?
Yeah, I only know one.
Nah, there's a few.
Well,
I'd have to think about
Barry
it.
Darius Hayward Bay. Who else you got?
DeQuell Jackson.
Okay, that's two.
Randy Starks.
You got more than one hand? You got more than one hand?
It's more than one hand. I'd have to think about it off the top of my head. I can't think of any, but there are more than five starters.
Okay. It's not a litany of starters, and there are no running backs.
No, it is not USC. But then again, USC went home to Washington State last week. So maybe we don't want to be
USC. We should probably touch upon the greatest game ever to be played that will be played on Saturday, I guess. Hey, Nevada Isles, if you'd like to call up with the greatest game of all time coming up on Saturday. Oh, we already had that discussion 2 years ago. Forget that. Anyway, every year there's a greatest game of all time, and it totally boggles my mind how much hype is to one college football game. But as I digress. Anyway.
You know what I'm disappointed about, though?
No, I don't.
It's probably not the right way to be. I was going to go to a bar with some Alabama friends for that game, but there's kind of a problem. It's Yom Kippur. One does not – now, I am not the most religious sort. Happy New Year to all the Jews out there. But the one thing I do is I fast on Yom Kippur. There is no way I can sit inside of a bar for 3.5 hours and not drink at least water.
Well, you're going to have to stay at home.
I will. My break fast, luckily, is a 10-minute walk, so I will. The game is at 3:30. So I'll go over at halftime. You know, I'll miss what should be a pretty end. I'm not about to call it the game of the season. We may have already had the game of the season in Clemson, Georgia, the first week of the year. It is certainly not the game of the century, but it should be a very fun game to watch Alabama, the two-time defending champions, against Johnny Manziel and, well, a bunch of guys that nobody knows down in Texas, down in College Station.
Since we'll talk about college and we'll get back to the pros in a little bit. Is this that good of a Texas A&M team? Or is this just Johnny Manziel and his bunch of misfits?
We don't know. The problem is they've lost a lot of players from last year's team. They lost Luke Jokel, who was a number two pick overall. They lost, I believe, one or two of their wideouts. Their defense may be a little bit better. So I don't really know. You know, and they played Sam Houston State and Rice. I mean, how much can you really know? You know, Alabama played Virginia.
But you're making my point for me.
Yeah, I don't know how good this team is. You know, I don't know if they're worthy of the number four, they're worthy of their number four or the number five ranking. But to be honest, I don't really care. I don't think there should be rankings before October 1st anyway. I think they're silly. You know, that's just the way things go. And it should be a really entertaining game. The Alabama A&M game last year was absolutely phenomenal. And Alabama has not looked great, which sounds weird considering they're coming off a 35-10 win off of a top 25 team in Virginia Tech. But they really just haven't looked – they did not look as good as anticipated, is the best way to put it. And, you know, but Nick Saban, knowing Nick Saban, he obsesses over these things. And supposedly he was playing in the weight room in Alabama the copies of the A&M-Alabama game on a loop over the entire summer. So, you know, my guess is Alabama will be motivated. My guess is Alabama will win.
So you think Alabama goes into College Station and pulls it off?
I do.
Okay.
And
I don't disagree. I mean, to me, I really do think it's Johnny Manziel and this bunch of misfits. And not to take away from the team, but I mean, this is the two-time defending world champion Alabama. This is not – you don't worry. The same questions that you have about A&M, you do not have about Alabama.
Alabama has two stud backs in Yeldon and the freshman, I forget his name. They got a solid quarterback with a gorgeous offense, I know you've noticed. A good defense.
Me? I've never noticed that.
Yeah. Yes, I am aware. I know you are a true sportsman and never notice anything to the contrary. Never anything to the side.
Me and Brett Berger are best pals.
Exactly. So it should be a fun game. And again, I don't know the players that A&M has to replace everybody that's left. And College Station may be one of the most imposing places to play a college football game. My guess is Alabama does not rattle. My guess is they want revenge and might stay in this game.
Well, here's my next question. So you have these two big games, and we've established that there have been two big games now. Basically, you got the Georgia game, and then you have this game. Should college football big games be this early? And I understand why they're this early, because you could have a loss instead of playing the national championship game. That will probably go away with the playoffs, the concept of that. So the question is this just too early for these types of games?
No, and I'll tell you why. First of all,
I would hope so.
There's a big game every week. When you have 108 teams playing in, say, in high-level college football, and say 30 to 40 of them are relevant, you're going to have a big game or two every week. Last week, we had Notre Dame-Michigan. Potentially, you know, the largest attendance in college football history, over 100,000 people. But for 15 teams, and a heck of a game. The week before, as we said, you had Georgia-Clemson, two top 10 teams. You had Georgia-South Carolina. Two top 10 teams, or number 5 and number 11. With Alabama and A&M, two top teams this week. Every week there is a top tier game. So I don't really, I just lost my train of thought on this. But
well, I guess my point is, can you start the conference games earlier? Or would that just take away from it anyway?
Oh, that's where you're going with it. Yeah. No, they won because the conference is what's the most meaningful to these teams, and you don't want to open, you want to have a game or two to kind of warm up to be ready for the conference.
So this is a warm up for Alabama for the SEC.
Well, Alabama
might be the best team that they play the whole year.
But you're forgetting Texas A&M is in the SEC.
Oh, that's correct.
Remember, they moved 2 years ago.
My bad. Okay, so let's go Michigan Notre Dame, right? So Michigan may be the best team that Notre Dame sees all year.
Maybe. But Notre Dame doesn't have an affiliation.
Right. And then actually they do now.
They play four games in the ACC. That's not an
five
affiliation.
Five games in the ACC.
It's a crock. And I'm not going to say what it's a crock of. But the thought is, the reason that you have these big name games, Clemson's a good example. The ACC is considered a relatively lower level. You know, they're not considered a Pac-10 or a Big 12 or a Big 10 or an SEC. In college football?
Yeah, I mean,
they're not considered at that level.
Okay. I hear what you're saying, and I do. Clemson, Georgia.
So,
Clemson's an ACC team, right? Georgia's an SEC team?
Yeah.
Right? Two different conferences? Is there
yes.
a better team that Clemson may face the entire year?
But here's my point. Clemson's playing for very well maybe playing for a national championship.
Okay.
They're not going to win it based solely upon an ACC schedule.
No, then play them later in the year.
But you can't do that. The conference schedules are all stupid. It can't be done. There's only one
Seth, you are breaking up.
You
are breaking up. You need to find a place where you're getting good cell reception.
I'm not really sure where I can. Let me see here. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now. This is a good Sprint commercial. Continue.
Okay. The problem is all the schedules are backloaded. So the only times you have are the beginning of the year and the end of the year. The middle is always the conference schedule. Clemson plays one tough game in the beginning of the year, Georgia. Then they go through the ACC schedule, and Florida State should be tough. Hopefully Maryland will be tough, but who the heck knows. And then at the end of the year, they play their rivalry game, which is South Carolina, which I thought the winner of the Clemson-South Carolina game would end up in the national championship game. So they need to play the big name up front to kind of get some publicity. Remember, this is why I don't believe in the polls before October 1st, October 15th, because nobody really knows at this point. But beating Georgia, impressive. Gives Taj Boyd a push towards the Heisman, gives the ACC some credibility, actually increased credibility after Miami beats Florida. So the ACC is looking, the better the conference looks, the winner of the conference, better chance they have to make the run. That's why
That's why you have polls, because most people would at least polls before whatever date you're looking at, October 15th, because without the polls, you say, okay, A&M's going out. Take A&M out of it because there's Johnny Manziel. Say there's no Johnny Manziel, but they're still just as good of a team. You don't know that going in. You don't know
that.
Well,
what I'm saying, I understand the point, the value. I understand why they do them. They do them for TV ratings. So
right.
I can say there's a number two team versus number seven team. But just because you're the number five team preseason doesn't mean you're the number, the problem is you have a team that's number 20. It's very difficult for them to move up to number two and number one. It's much easier for a team that's number five or number six. And what I'm saying is it's very hard to base anything on the first couple of weeks of the season.
Well, that's true. And that's why a first week or a second week loss is not as hurtful as a week 10 loss. Or a week 12 loss, because you
right.
drop down
but,
six or seven spots, and then you can make your way back up. A loss
yeah,
is much more detrimental then a win is valuable.
I agree. Well, I hedge on that. It depends on the team. Clemson loses to Georgia. Clemson cannot go to the national title game. They can go 11-1. They're not going to a title game. Georgia loses this game. Georgia makes a run through the SEC. Georgia doesn't lose the rest of the season. Georgia's in the national championship game.
Hmm.
It's all
because
it's
of the
all
strength
upon,
of schedule.
It's not even. I have to look at the schedule because now that I'm away from my computer, I can't. The SEC.
No, but I'm saying they're in the SEC.
Yeah.
So
it's not
based
even,
on the strength of
even,
schedule.
Yes, based on the strength of schedule and based on the publicity that you get. The winner of the SEC is always going to, you know, at this point, unless there's two undefeated teams, the winner of the SEC is always going to get a national champion. It's always going to be in the national championship game. They've
well,
won seven consecutive national titles.
Right, so let's go with that. Okay, you said that Georgia will if they lose, will go to a national championship game if they win now in the SEC. What if there are two undefeated teams?
And I just said, if there are two undefeated teams, most likely they will not. However,
okay.
It depends. If one of the undefeated teams is Louisville, then, yeah, I think a one-loss Georgia team losing their first game of the season to a top-five Clemson team, I think we'll get a bid over Louisville. That being said, if Georgia had beaten Clemson, Clemson goes 11-1, runs the table. I don't see Clemson getting a national title bid.
Because of the conference that they're in.
Because of the conference that they're in. My feeling is that Clemson or Florida State will have to go undefeated to make a national title game. A team from the SEC, perhaps a team from the Pac-10, can get through with a loss.
Why a team from the Pac-10? Because the Pac-10 has notoriously been a weaker conference.
Well, but look at it this way. You have two teams that are preseason top five.
Right.
We'll take
but
Oregon.
The difference from routinely, notoriously, is that they are very top-heavy. And they are not, they are very much like, I guess, the Big East is very bottom-heavy. But they have two or three great teams.
There is no Big East.
And they have nobody.
Well, I disagree, actually, this year. I think the Pac-10 is pretty solid. But I understand your point. But let's say, let's take last year. Stanford, I believe, beats Oregon 17-14, 21-17, something like that. Oregon ends up, I believe, number three in the post in the last poll before they picked the Bulls. Stanford won the tie break. And ended up going to the Pac-10 championship and going to the Rose Bowl. That being said, if Notre Dame doesn't get, typical Notre Dame luck and end up number two, then Oregon with that loss would still go through to the title game. It would have gone through the title game against Alabama over anybody else, including an undefeated Louisville if there was one, so on and so forth. I don't think the Big Ten has that respect at this point. I don't think they deserve it. I don't think the Big Ten is very good. The Big 12, I don't think, is good enough at this point to possibly get that. But the two conferences I think that you have the respect at that point are the Pac-10 and the SEC. The SEC first and foremost, and well-warranted having won seven titles in a row, and then the Pac-10 probably would be second. USC is, very much down. And we can already see Lane Kiffin maybe working for his daddy pretty soon out in Dallas. Because
I think Lane Kiffin will be working for John Gruden in Dallas. But
I'm not sure Lane's going to make it through the year. Hayden's a great athletic director, but you cannot lose at home to Washington State.
Football teams generally do not fire coaches mid-year.
No, but I think this would be the rare exception. We'll see what happens. Obviously, it's one game, and we're kind of – and it's also why I don't completely overreact, although I'm a bit concerned in regards to the Giants and David Wilson. It is one game. And, Coughlin had that same problem with Wilson a year ago. He did play a few games towards the end of the year and was significantly better. you know, the problem as a fantasy quarter player, it's fantasy owner, it scares the heck out of me. As a Giants fan, there, you know, he will get better. Or Brandon Jacobs, who you said, will, you know, will have his chance to redeem himself. And I'm sure, you know, Brandon Jacobs has been waiting for this, begging for this for pretty much 2 years now. So my guess is he will be quite motivated. And, you know, as bad as the Giants looked, and they looked awful on Monday night against the Sunday night against the Cowboys, does anyone really think the Cowboys, if that fluke interception doesn't happen with a minute to go, does anyone think the Cowboys win that game?
I'll tell you one thing that did not impress me at all, and I think a lot of it has to do with injuries. The Giant back four, the secondary, is very scary in regards to, A, how thin they are right now, with Akamura now going out with a concussion. You've lost Stevie Brown. Terrell Thomas is on his, what, seventh ACL? I believe they're pretty much one injury away from going to the scrap heap to get another cornerback.
Well, want to tell you a little secret? Welcome to the Giants secondary for the last 35 years. They've always been
come on. I mean,
the Giants' weakness has always been their secondary. From their championship teams in 86 and 90.
Marty Guyton. They used to have Myron Guyton and Mark Collins.
Yes, and Terry Kinnard. Yes, I can name the players, too. And they're okay. You don't see too many Hall of Famers out of that group. You don't see too many All-Pros out of that group. You know, in 2001, or 2007, excuse me, they get by. They've always had a great pass rush. The difference now is they did have, obviously, great linebackers with, you know, LT and Carson and Carl Banks and all that. They don't have great linebackers now. Their whole defense is predicated on the front four.
And did you see a great pass rush on Sunday night? Because I didn't.
No, and that was worrisome. But, again, it's a weekend. I don't try to overjudge off of a week playing on the road on Sunday night in Dallas. I just don't.
Well,
I mean, you should be thrilled.
Let me ask you this. Two years ago? We're opening night against Dallas. Eli goes into Jerryville, right? Jerrytown. Whatever you want to call it. And wins. And wins pretty convincingly. And I guess what I'm saying is, do you believe that you would be more, not favorable, but I'm saying more excited with a win than you are less worried about a loss?
Really?
Would you be overpumping a win as opposed to downplaying a loss?
No. First game of the season. I don't like the Cowboys. Would I have liked to see them win? Of course I would have. But
Cowboys. That's not what I'm saying.
You're saying, are people happier with a win than they are less unhappy with a loss? Or more?
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying, do people over-evaluate week one when they win as opposed to downplay it when they lose?
People absolutely overvalue. Well, look at your Jets. Congratulations.
Let's take the Jets, okay? The Jets' defense looked absolutely amazing. They really did. Start to finish, their defense looked great. Their offense is horrendous. And they were one play away from losing that game. They should have lost that game. If that's anybody but Geno Smith that gets pushed out of bounds, a running back, a wide out, a tight end, there is no penalty, and they lose. And I say the same thing that I do today. I don't say anything different. That's what I'm saying. I mean, when people lose, they seem to say, oh, it's week one, it's no big deal. When people win, the majority are like, hey, yeah, we got a great team. I see it that way. I'm not one of those people because, granted, I think the Jets are going to win four games this year. So what's to be excited about?
Although I think they do have a much better chance against New England now after seeing New England last week. But so what do you think was the most – who do you think was the most disappointing team in week one?
The Steelers. I think playing a mediocre Titans team at home and scoring 2 points in the first 58 minutes is not an acceptable option. And their running game is horrendous. Their offensive line is terrible. Their defense is old. You know, we've talked about it last week on our preview. You know, this could be a 7-9 team. There wasn't too much.
I think they're worse than that now.
Well,
I mean,
again, I don't want to over.
Probably their best
over...
player. No. I'm not taking that game. I'm taking the injuries that came out of that game. They lost Maurice Pouncey for the rest of the year. They lost. So he's their center. Probably their best overall player. They lost for the rest of the year. They lost their starting middle linebacker, Larry Foote, for the rest of the year. They lost their leading rusher, who was going to be replaced in 2 weeks, but at least their leading rusher for game one for the rest of the year, who was also their kick returner. I'm not taking it based on the one game. I'm taking it based on the fact that they won't have those three guys back. And those are three pretty big guys.
You also said that, you know, the biggest disappointment for week one. That I thought was, you know, I'm not talking about the injuries that the subsequent injuries that came after that, you know, the impact going forward. Who else? I thought Tampa Bay was very disappointing. I thought their offense was awful. I expected more. Green Bay's supposed improved defense, not so much. It was an entertaining weekend, which is nice for a first weekend. I don't think it was great. I don't think there were great games. There were a few good ones, but I don't think, you know, it's week one. I'm just glad that football's back more than anything else.
Well, last night's games were certainly exciting. No question. I was very disappointed in Tampa. And being a Jets fan, I was very happy. But being an overall football guy, Tampa Bay looked like they didn't know what they were doing for the first half of the game. They were completely out of sorts.
I thought you were talking about last night's games.
No, I was originally, but I'm saying if Tom Coughlin thought he saw the worst half of football ever from his team in the first half, he didn't really watch the Tampa Bay game. Because I've never seen a more undisciplined team other than the Raiders.
It was ugly. And I'll be honest, I skipped yesterday's games to watch the Open. And I do want to kind of go on to that a little bit.
Okay.
I'm now convinced Rafael Nadal is the greatest player of all time. All time.
He retired today, he's the greatest player of all time?
I said if he stays healthy.
Okay.
Which means he needs another 2 years on
that. How much longer does he have to play?
He's 23, 24, 25. If he stays healthy, he loves this game. He is passionate, his tennis. And watching him play in a pretty stunning four-set win over the number one player in the world, Novak Djokovic, is in his 13th Grand Slam. The first three sets, the tennis was at such a ridiculously high level. And Djokovic should have won the third set and couldn't, for some reason, just couldn't pull through. And Nadal breaks him to win the third set, and it pretty much puts him away in the fourth. The more I think about it, Nadal has a winning record against practically, I believe, in the top 20. He's won the career Grand Slam, or he's won 13 Grand Slams. My guess is if he stays healthy, he will break Federer by around 2015, 2016. Because I don't think – Federer, I think, may have one Wimbledon left in him. And think about this. The man he's ever – in the four majors, his lowest winning percentage is 80% in the Australian. He's 58-1 at the French. He's lost one match. He plays in the greatest matches. He's played in three or four of the greatest matches I've ever seen. The Wimbledon final 3 or 4 years ago against Federer. The Australian final against Djokovic this year, and the semi in the French against Djokovic. He is so mentally tough. You know, he sat out last year based upon his knee issues to a point where they weren't sure he was going to be able to come back. I believe the last match he lost was at Wimbledon. I don't want to say he cruised through, but just watching him play, it's a level beyond, I think, anything I've ever seen before. And somehow he's gotten better off after 6 months of knee surgery, of knee injuries. I don't think he can be beaten right now. I really don't.
Okay.
And so Djokovic, to be fair, came off a brutal 5-set win over Stan Wawrinka in the semis, which was a phenomenal match. But I don't see him losing.
Okay, so let's look at it this way. Who's more dominant, Serena Williams or Rafael Nadal?
Serena Williams, because she simply doesn't have the competition that Nadal has. The only player that's considered remotely close to her level is Victoria Azarenka, who she beat in the finals this year.
Is that because she's so far above everybody else? That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's because she is so far above everybody else.
Okay, not her fault.
No, I'm not blaming her. There is no one I believe currently who can beat her. At her A game, I don't think anyone's got a shot. Best women's player, yes.
Yeah, best women's player of all time.
Yeah, I'm not combining women and men on this. But Wade from New York just comments, come on, amigo, it's pronounced Djokovic. I guess I said Djokovic. Sorry about that. But there's nobody's going to beat Serena at this point. Azarenka can beat her on her best day. If Serena is fully motivated, oh man, I'm getting all sorts of comments here. Wimbledon, not Wimbledon. I didn't realize I have like the Baltimore pronunciation issues, and I apologize, or an enunciation issues, and I apologize.
Is it tax season? Are these all the Deloitte auditors or something?
Yeah, apparently I'm being audited on my enunciation. Go figure. That's all right.
Hey. If you'd like to call in an audit set, 760-283-0846. We have yet to get out the number, so I apologize to those.
Or if you're a 28-year-old brunette from Deloitte that we think Sean may be interested in, please, you're more than welcome to call in.
Do you have somebody in mind that I'm just missing here?
No, wasn't her name Sarah, the one that we were waiting for last year that to call and call and call?
Yeah, but that was for you, dude, not for me.
Oh, well, we'll give it to you. So,
thanks, I appreciate
that. I look at it right now. Federer is obviously, you know, has taken a significant step back. Losing to Tommy Robredo in straight sets on hard courts is not acceptable for someone of that level, and he's really just, you know, he may have one Wimbledon left in him at that level, and we'll see what happens. Andy Murray just looks tired. Having won Wimbledon this year, breaking the 3,425-year strike or hiatus of British winners, having won the Olympic gold medal last year, he's looked flat since Wimbledon. Since Wimbledon. And got annihilated by Wawrinka in three sets. So it's an interesting, if Nadal can stay healthy, you know, maybe Djokovic can beat him in the French. maybe in what could beat him in a major or two. But I see Nadal winning another two, four, six. I see him winning another one or two majors per year into for the next 3 or 4 years.
Well, you never know. There can always be a guy that's coming up. You don't know that. I mean, that's a little. You're saying if everything stays status quo, right?
I'm saying there's nobody there. There's no next big thing coming up. 32 of the last 33 majors have been won by four players. Juan Martin Del Potro being the only other one, and he can't stay healthy. Robin Soderling was the number 5 player in the world, the only guy to beat Nadal at the French. He hasn't played in 2 years because of mono. Yes, because of mono. And I thought my 9-month issue was bad. The Americans are irrelevant, unfortunately. So we're looking at a Richard Gasquet, a David Ferrer. These are not guys who are going to beat Nadal at a major. They're not. Thomas Burdich, they're not. They're intimidated. So you're not.
You don't have to convince me. I'm not the guy you need to convince.
Well, no, I'm defending my point. That I believe for the next 3-4 years, if Rafael Nadal can stay healthy, by 2016, 2017, something along those lines, he'll probably pass Federer with the all-time Grand Slam wins. And, 34 out of 35. My apologies, Wade. I don't have the statistics in front of me. I know it was someone in the 30s. So it was a fun U.S. Open. It always is. I'm glad I was more concerned about – the biggest concern I had was missing a lot of it because of the CBS Time Warner deal, which finally came through. So I'm paying an extra dollar, whatever I'm paying. It is what it is. I was more than happy to sit on my deck, crack open a Brooklyn Lager, and watch a little bit of tennis. I was a very happy man. So.
Okay.
Anyway.
You good? You done with your tennis
spiel? I'm good. I think my diatribe is done.
Okay. Welcome back to the show, Sean. Thank you very much for playing. And in other news this week, baseball and softball are not going to be Olympic sports in 2020 in Tokyo, Japan. Instead, wrestling makes its return. And I know that you and I had this discussion when wrestling got kicked to the curb, that wrestling should be one of those, like, anchor sports. There's no reason for wrestling not to be. And this is not WWE wrestling, people. This is Greco-Roman wrestling. That it should be one of those core sports. I think I'm being
I want to see Hulk Hogan give the leg drop.
That would be awesome. I got to tell you, it would be. I'm getting a little disturbed. And tell me if I'm a little off base. Sports should not be coming in and out of the Olympics. Either you're an Olympic sport or you're not an Olympic sport. And that's it. I understand the need for adding sports perhaps once every like 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. But you can't keep taking in and out sports. I think that takes away pretty much the whole fabric of what the Olympic Games are all about.
I agree. There doesn't seem to be – I don't quite understand the need really to take sports away from the Olympics. And to be perfectly honest, I don't grasp the real need for sports to join. Especially, I mean, I think a sport like softball, I think, makes sense because there's no other place for it.
Right, but you know why softball was kicked to the curb, right?
Because
the Americans didn't move the game for like 99 games.
Right. I understand that. I thought you were going somewhere. Although I believe they actually lost the last Olympic softball.
They did lose one game. But that was the reason why they were taken out, was because the U.S. was so dominant that there was no way anybody else was going to win. And I think in some ways that makes sense because It's only played mostly in the U.S. I don't think baseball should be an Olympic sport.
Absolutely
really
not.
But I don't think BMX biking should be an Olympic sport either.
You don't believe that what should be?
BMX biking.
No.
Or skateboarding.
I agree.
Or half pipe. So whatever Sean White, Carrot Top, can make millions of dollars. I mean, the Olympics when I was a kid, when we were kids, were track and field. Tennis wasn't a sport back then. There was weightlifting, swimming, gymnastics.
Yeah,
I think that was about it.
Yeah, it was.
Right. Yeah,
it was. Three compilations.
And obviously wrestling. Yeah, you had like four or five core things, and volleyball was in there as well.
And it was.
That was
the great thing about the great thing about the Olympics at that point, were you had these sports that once every 4 years people really cared about. Nobody cares about swimming now. People care in 2016 if Michael Phelps comes back.
Or
people
the next
don't
guy,
watch,
whoever that is. Or the next guy.
Right. People don't watch gymnastics. There is no gymnastics channel. People don't care until the Olympics. And now my feeling is a lot of these sports, yes, I enjoy Olympic basketball. But I don't really care.
No, and the reason, let's be clear why Olympic basketball was there. Olympic basketball was there because all these different leagues had, all these different countries had leagues. So that's why it was there. So it was an international game. But for better or for worse, the NBA has become the go-to place. Like those Russians, or Croatians, Drazen Petrovic, Vlade Divac, go back to Alexander Volkov, who played for the Hawks for a little bit. Those guys, the first guys that came over, have been playing in their professional league for 5-10 years already. Same thing with hockey, with Sergei Makarov and Vladimir Konstantinov. Anybody with the last name is Ov. Oh, I'm sorry, we have a call. Hold on a second, let's see. Let's see who we got. I think this is my pal Mark down in D.C. Let's see. Mark.
Sean.
How are
Sean,
you, Mark?
I'm a little unhappy.
Mark, Seth, Mark. Mark, Seth. Introduction.
Nice to meet you,
made.
Seth.
Sean, are you
going to
let me talk?
Yeah, go ahead.
Sean, I'm very unhappy.
Yeah, I got to hear this. Go ahead.
I was just, I'm driving home, and as you know, I live and breathe also in Boston sports, and I was listening to 98.5, the Sports Hub in Boston, and they're reporting that Danny Amendola is unlikely to play on Thursday night against your beloved Jets. And
yes,
I'm thinking his groin injury, which he aggravated in the injured in the preseason and, got worse on Sunday in Buffalo. Anyway, I'm thinking that the Patriots are getting the Jets at precisely the wrong time. The Patriots, I think, are going to regret their parsimony with regard to their receiving corps because besides Amendola and Edelman, who will be the primary target, I think, of Brady on Thursday night. Josh Boyce, Cambrell Tompkins, and Aaron Dobson are just not ready for prime time, so to speak. And I think it's really going to show up. The Patriots will be without Vereen. They just put him on the 8-week IR due to his broken wrist. And I think, that as much as I hate to say it, Rex Ryan is a good enough coach to show Brady enough different looks that he might they might just be effective. So unless the Patriots' defense can really step up and special teams, you know, win the game, as Coach Bill likes to say, in the other facets of the game, I wouldn't be surprised, I hate to admit, if the Patriots lose.
Well, I'm not going that far. When I heard Amendola was out this week, or is very questionable to play, which to me means out,
mm-hmm.
I was definitely intrigued. I think that the spread of 12 to 14 points, and we don't endorse gambling on the Seth and Sean Sports Radio Show, but a 12-point spread is a little bit much for the Patriots on this game. I was going to leave this to my last 5 minutes, but I think Bill Belichick, for all the personnel moves that he gets a whole lot of credit for, has to really take it on the chin as far as the secondary and the wide receiving core that he did not help out this offseason. And I really think they are going to suffer greatly because of that.
I completely agree with you. I completely agree with you. And I think not signing Welker was a big mistake. I think Amendola is just as good as he is, but he's not a healthy version of Welker. And I think that, you know, they did make an attempt, a good attempt with the secondary in signing Adrian Wilson from Arizona, but he's now on the IR for the rest of the year. So that defense, I think, is pretty good at best. And although I must say they really rose to the occasion in the fourth quarter against Buffalo when they weren't showing a whole lot previous to that, and they shut Buffalo down last possession of the third quarter and all of the fourth quarter, Buffalo didn't score a point, and that really saved the Patriots' butts until Brady got on track and with Amendola and with Vereen and with Edelman on the last drive where they kicked the field goal with 5 seconds to go.
Yeah, I agree, absolutely.
But I completely agree with you. It's almost heresy in New England to criticize Coach Bill because, you know, he's got the record and the Super Bowl rings to prove it. And, you know, on one hand, while I do agree that, you know, no system, it's the system and not the players, professional sports is about talent and then marshaling that talent. And I think sometimes, you know, and I know there are complicating factors with managing salary cap, et cetera, but I think that some of these personnel decisions, and the Patriots, by the way, as you noted, are well under the salary cap, I think might come back to haunt them. Are they going to win the AFC East? Almost certainly. The question is, that's not what we care about in Boston. What we want is a trip to the Super Bowl and to win it. And as you know, we haven't won one since Super Bowl 39.
Nobody knows that better than Seth. Mark, it's been great talking to you. Thanks so much for giving us a call. We really appreciate it.
You guys do a great job. I look forward to catching up with you.
All right, talk to you soon, Mark. Thanks.
You
bet. That was our buddy Mark down in D.C. And Seth, nobody knows that the Patriots haven't won a Super Bowl more than you.
I am vaguely aware of that fact. They had a couple chances. Damn shame. But the other question is, we were talking about David Wilson before. Well, Stephen Ridley was benched for the same problem.
Agreed.
So you now they have LeGarrette Blount, who has been a pretty good running back over the years now, Tampa. But here is the problem. You're looking at no wideouts, and this was a discussion that we had, is nobody, if there was an AFC East team, and maybe it's the Dolphins, but considering of Mike Wallace complaining after the first game when they won, you know, no one really sees Miami as the threat yet. So you have Miami, Buffalo is not ready, the Jets don't have an offense.
Are the Jets?
New England has lost their top five wideouts, their secondary, and I kind of let you guys go on this, but Belichick is drafted awfully, horrendously. in regards to the secondary over the last few years. They haven't been able to keep any of the guys they drafted. So they have no secondary. They have no, you know, they have no wideouts at this point with Gronkowski injured. Sutfield didn't even have a catch. Tompkins had like two. Hernandez is facing death row. I mean, you have no offense. You have no real offense. And the reason that I think, you know, that when I always hear about that Tom Brady, you know, Peyton Manning argument, the reason I always go back to Brady is because I don't think Brady's had that much talent surrounding him. While Manning's had an enormous amount of talent. I don't think New England's that good. I just think the division's that weak.
Okay, but here's the thing, and I'll take this Brady-Manning argument because I think that it needs to be said. Manning did not have as good an offensive line as Brady did. There's no question in my mind. Brady had Logan Mankins. He had Dan Connolly, who's now actually the center for the Broncos. But he had a much better offensive line than Manning ever did. Now, you never saw that because Manning's quick release is much better than Brady to begin with. But I think Brady had just as much talent. I just think it was talent in different spots. Did he have an Edgerrin James? No, but he had a Corey Dillon. I mean,
Corey Dillon ran
backs.
Out of was Corey Dillon is most famous for running out of bounds on every play possible. And Corey Dillon didn't
have 1,400 yards for that team.
Corey Dillon was not Edgerrin James.
No, he's not. But overall, I think Brady's had just as much talent. I really do. I think they've had a much better
championship
defense than,
teams.
They had a much better defense than the Colts ever did. That's what
they had a decent. They had a decent defense. They didn't have a great defense. They had a defense. Indianapolis had an average defense with Freeney and Robert Mathis. They had some players. Gary Brackett.
Yes, I think the one thing that you stated before that I disagree with is you said that Belichick over recent times has had a bad case of drafts. I don't think Bill Belichick has ever drafted well. I think when he had Scott Pioli there, he drafted well because Pioli hit the draft. I don't think Bill Belichick, since Scott Pioli has left, they haven't had one really good draft. I mean, you could say the Gronkowski-Hernandez draft was a good draft, but the reason those two guys fell to them was exactly the reason why they're not playing now. Hernandez had a bad rap in college, and Gronkowski had a back injury when he was in college. So he fell to the second round. So the reason that they're not playing now is the reason that they dropped in the first place. Belichick took calculated risks, and he got to a Super Bowl one year. I don't know. I'd give up a second-round pick to get to the Super Bowl. Dude, I'd give up my whole draft to get to the Super Bowl. So, I mean,
please, to the Jets, you'd give up a decade of draft picks to go to the Super Bowl. Who the hell is it?
I give up the first board that I may never have. And I'd name her Brady.
Anyway. We got about 6 minutes to go, and there's a couple topics I want to hit on. But what did you want to discuss? We didn't get to talk too much baseball.
No,
what did you
right.
want to hit
I think
on?
Next week we'll learn a lot more about where the playoffs are. And we'll give a little bit of a playoff preview next week and the week after, so we can skip on baseball and just I'll touch upon it in the last 5 minutes.
Okay. Well, there are two topics that I think need to be said. One is supposedly the supposed fight of the century on Saturday night.
Oh yeah, again.
Floyd. I said supposed. I'm so excited that I'm skipping the fight. Floyd Mayweather versus Canelo Alvarez at the MGM Grand. The problem being that I don't think Alvarez can beat. I don't think Alvarez can beat Mayweather. I don't think anyone can beat Mayweather at this point. And we joked about Nabate. Nabate is an enormous Mayweather fan. I'm not. I think Mayweather, in his prime, there were fights that could have been made that could have put him into that all-time, truly all-time pantheon of greats with Henry Armstrong and Sugar Ray Robinson. You don't become the best of all time by being undefeated in boxing. Rocky Marciano is the only heavyweight ever to go undefeated, 49-0. Nobody considers Rocky Marciano one of the top five heavyweights of all time, let alone boxers.
Can't
and unfortunately, what'd you say? Coming to America quote. Never go wrong with that.
Hey, it was well placed. Come on.
It was. I think it was a very good quote. I'm giving you props.
Thank you.
So, this is a fight that Mayweather should win. To be fair, Mayweather is now taking fights that are the correct fights, and I can't argue this point. He should have fought Cotto. He should have fought Roberto Guerrero last time. You know, and Guerrero was intimidated. That's not his fault. It was still the right fight. Alvarez is the right fight for him. The problem is, I said, I don't think there's anyone at this weight class who can beat him at this point. And I refuse to pay $85 or $90 or $100 to watch this fight.
Yeah,
I actually think the undercard. I actually think the undercard fight, Danny Garcia versus Lucas Matisse for the 140 title is actually the better fight. And I think the winner of that fight will fight Mayweather next. And that should be pretty interesting. Ironically, Oscar De La Hoya, who has been bad-mouthing Mayweather and promoting the fight, is not going to be attending the fight because he's going to rehab. That was announced today. So, once again, Oscar De La Hoya, well done. The other thing, and this is a sport we never talk about for good reason, in NASCAR. Did you read about this, Sean?
I doubt it.
This guy who purposely crashed.
Nope.
So his teammate would make the chase. And what they did is NASCAR did something unprecedented. They disqualified not the guy who crashed, Clint Boyer, but the guy who made the chase because of the crash, Martin Truex,
what?
And promoted the guy behind them.
That doesn't make
Read
sense.
About it. It's fascinating.
All right.
And
I'll make sure to check that out.
And that'll be our once or twice a year NASCAR. Danny and Kathleen, that one's for you. And that's
yeah,
my goodbye. So,
Well, my goodbye is very simple. Congratulations to all those long Pittsburgh Pirate fans that had never seen until this week a 500 team. It's amazing. 1992. The last time that the Pirates. Now, in 1992, I was 16. So, for anybody that's under 21 years, anybody that cannot drink in Pittsburgh, they have not seen a Pittsburgh team with a winning record. And I find that absolutely amazing. In 1992, let's just think of some of the things that happened in 1992. The Islanders, the New York Islanders, made it to the semifinals of the NHL Stanley Cup. David Volek scored a goal over Mario Lemieux and the Pittsburgh Penguins, 1992. This was before you couldn't get on a plane before going through security, like we do tomorrow, as we will remember tomorrow. It was a long, long time ago. So anyway, congratulations to all the Pittsburgh Penguins, Pittsburgh Pirates, Pittsburgh Steelers, anybody in Pittsburgh, congratulations. I'd be remiss if we didn't acknowledge what tomorrow is, though. We have one more minute left in the show, and tomorrow being September 11th, both of us being in New York City. And it is a day that I'm looking actually at the Freedom Tower right now in front of me as I make my new home in Battery City Park for a couple of months. And you remember where you were 12 years ago. It'll be a solemn day tomorrow, but we should take at least 30 seconds of silence to remember that. So we're going to sign off 30 seconds early, and we're going to keep that silence. So for Seth, this has been Sean Palmer. And good night. We'll talk to you next week.